everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is an educational service of the public interest, and I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour, an editorial review, is heard nationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 75 countries worldwide over the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour, an editorial review, please visit my webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. The Law Hour, an editorial review, brings you important information about law news and current events, so stay tuned for tonight's special report on the economic bubble right after this. Hey, if you've got a lot, 50 by 100 feet, with a 2,000 square foot house, then you've got space for 6 raised beds that contain 2,400 square feet. That's called French intensive culture. 2,400 square feet is enough space to grow all of the food that a family of 6 will eat in one entire year. That's right, a family of 6, 2,400 square feet, and you can do it in the middle of downtown Cleveland, Ohio, just as easily as you can out in the country. The idea that you're trapped in the city and that you can't provide for yourself and you can't provide for your family because of a space limitation is a fiction. You don't need extra cash to buy a tractor, a plow, a harrow, a shovel, a rake, and a hoe is more in line with what we need for an urban, French, intensive culture farm. We don't need a lot of acres, combines, or price supports. What we need is pruners, newspaper for mulch, and open pollinated seed. Now, if you've got a 2,400 square foot backyard, which is big enough for a decent garden, you can feed your whole family right there in downtown Cleveland, New York, or wherever your house is located, 50 by 100 foot lot. Now, we have designed this program called Subsistence and Survival to allow for fresh vegetables and to reduce stress on you by not making you can, dry, or store everything that you produce all at the same time. You won't need any specialized tools. All you need are some simple hand tools like a rake, a hoe, and a shovel, a supply of newspaper for mulch, some seeds to plant, and some knowledge about how to plant them and how to use them. That's what's important. Now, if you'd like to learn more, why don't you call and order my free general law CD package first? Now, that's a 4-hour commentary on the law in general. It's educational, it's informative, it's entertaining. Best of all, it's free of charge, and you can call right now. The number to call, 417-273-4967. And remember, my Subsistence and Survival School is also available on compact disc for adult home study. Now, if you're online, you can go to the website, georgegordon.org, click onto the email machine, and send an email request for that free general law CD package. Remember, that's georgegordon.org, or call direct, 417-273-4967. All right, last time we were talking about all the bad news. So I showed you from the underground economic reports, the Mugambo Guru and Bob Chapman and Reichbacher and, I don't know, Bill Bonner and a couple others, that all's not as well as our government would have us believe, that they lie to us a lot. The consumer price index is as useless as tits on a boar hog. It's just filled with lies and inaccuracies, and what we're really engaged in here is hyperinflation and 22% rises in real estate values or prices over the last 5 years. 20% a year is telling you, boys and girls, that hyperinflation is at the doorstep. This is not good news. This is bad news. This is where you need to hunker down, and I showed you the Mugambo. He starts his newsletter off nearly every week, and he says, well, I'm hunkered down in the Mugambo bunker, getting ready for tough times ahead. What kind of tough times is he preparing for? What's he thinking about? And so he, along with a lot of these other economic newsletter writers, are telling you what you need to do is to get debt-free, pay off all of your debts, debt-free, pay off that $146,000 that you owe, you know, your per capita share of the national debt and your mortgage on your house and your consumer debts and car payments and all of that, your $146,000, pay all that off next week, so you're free and clear. and then put the rest of your money into gold and silver. Now let's talk about this gold and silver, because you hear a lot about that. People are talking about how gold and silver is poised for this great price increase. Well, let me tell you where the price increases are going on. The price of soybeans went up 13% last month. Corn went up 9% last month. Foodstuffs as a whole over the last year have gone up 15%. Gold didn't do that well. And I'm not so sure that putting all of your money into gold is the panacea that everybody, at least on the conservative wing of this issue of the economy, are making it out to be. So on the one hand, you've got the liberals, and they tell you that gold is an anachronism that ought to be abolished and done away with and banned from society. Gold is bad for you and you shouldn't have it. And the other side says, well, you can't live without it. Now, it's true that God told you to use just weights and balances, told you to use gold and silver coin, gave you the gold and silver and the iron to dig out of the hills, and that if we had followed that advice, then we would still be using gold and silver coin. But we didn't follow that advice, and we're using fiat paper currency, which has now put us in the position that we're in today in 2005, with hyperinflation banging at the door, a trade balance of around $600 to $800 billion a year, a national budget deficit of around $400 to $500 billion a year, depending upon who you listen to and how you're counting, and enormous personal consumer debt. And then we're sitting over here with the Chinese, the Japanese, and the South Koreans with about $1 trillion worth of dollars sitting out there ready to buy up everything that isn't nailed down. And our pension plans are going out of circulation. They're about to go bankrupt. United Airlines just bankrupted out of theirs. And all the other airlines are going to have to do the same thing. General Motors is poised on the verge of bankruptcy. We're exporting about, I forgot how many it is, but it's 2 million jobs have been sent over to China, India, and other countries. Or we're exporting our jobs. It's called outsourcing. We import Philippine nurses to work in our hospitals. What kind of crazy, lunatic, fringe nonsense is this? How does this benefit you, Joe, and you, Sally? Or me, George Gordon? Well, it doesn't benefit us. It probably benefits Bill Gates, Warren Buffett, and Dick Cheney, and Halliburton, and General Electric, and General Motors. Probably these big multinational corporations make a lot of money, but it isn't solving our problem. And we're faced with a problem here. How are we going to survive this? How is our standard of living going to be impacted over the next 5, 10, 20 years? Now, I pointed out when I started the series that I'm getting about one call a week from people just like you that are saying, Mr. Gordon, I'd like to come work for you. I'd like to come work on your farm. I'd like to move to Ozark County. I'd like to get closer to you. Now, here's what that really boils down to in the final analysis. What you're saying, in effect, think about it now. I'm dissatisfied with my guardian. I'm dissatisfied with the state of Florida or the state of California or the United States of America. I'm dissatisfied with my guardian, and I'm looking for a new guardian, and you look like a good guy, Mr. Gordon. Now, there was a time when I used to support a lot of people, 30. I had 30 employees, and I supported 30 families, but I looked at this the other day, my wife and I were talking about it, and said, if you've got one call a week, now that's up from about one a month to one a week. Now that's four times more. That's 52 people a year. 52 of you listeners out there are calling me and saying, I'd like to go to work for you. And that's great. And I'm impressed and I'm flattered and I appreciate your vote of confidence. But unfortunately, little Georgie Gordon cannot support 52 other families. I don't have enough money. I'm an old man. I don't have enough physical energy to get out there and to plant enough food in my garden to feed 52 families, assuming these 52 families were made up of four persons each, which would be around 100 people. You know, could George Gordon support 100 people? And the answer is no, I don't think I can. I don't think I've got enough physical energy to do that. I can support the four in my family. I might even be able to support four or five other families. But not 50. But you know, you 50 families out there could all support yourselves if you knew how. Now, there was a time in America when we practiced individual responsibility rather than collective irresponsibility. collective irresponsibility. That's where we practice from each according to his ability and to each according to his need. That just produces lines of people standing in line to share the shortage. Now, there's no shortage out there right now. As I speak to you here in July of 2005, boys and girls, there's no shortages out there. There's no rationing. There's plenty of everything for everybody. And I can remember rationing. I can remember World War II. There actually was rationing. And because of that, we had to have ration cards and buttons and coupons and stand in line and queues, and we had to share the shortage and do without. Now, let me describe that for you, and then I'm going to show you. Here's what I think would be a wise course of action to prevent your house being foreclosed on, your car being repossessed, and you being reduced to unemployment, welfare, food stamps, maybe a concentration camp, or at least a relocation center. That's what the Germans did for the Jews, you know, sent them off to relocation centers. That maybe there's a better formula out there. And I don't know that it necessarily entails gold and silver. So let me describe this rationing thing. Here's World War II. You can't get coffee. Why? Well, because coffee comes from overseas, and you got to ship it in. And every ship that the United States government could steal, beg, borrow, or utilize in any way is hauling troops and war material and war cargo off to the battlefields of Europe and Japan. So there's not very many ships hauling coffee from Colombia up to Baton Rouge or up to New Orleans, Louisiana. I mean, that's just not happening. So there is some coming in, but what little bit that is coming in has to be sent off to the war effort, and things are kind of unnatural and unnormal. And so we have to have rationing of coffee, sugar, tires, gasoline, all kinds of stuff. Now, you know, you can live a long time without gasoline, you can live a long time without tires, but you can't live a long time without food, shelter, and clothing. So let's get down to the basics. Subsistence and survival deals with food, clothing, and shelter. If we happen to have an automobile with tires on it, that's frosting on the cake. That's gravy. That's fun time. That's great. We want that. But you can live a long time without it. And if you have to choose between wheels and beans, I think that you'll make a wiser choice choosing pinto beans over wheels. Because in World War II, we didn't have a car. In fact, nobody that I know of in Corbell, California had a car. There were a few cars. Yeah, there were a few cars. A few trucks running around. But there weren't very many, and the people that had them had a reason for having them, because you had to have a ration card to get gasoline. Now, you can complain about gasoline at $2 or $3 a gallon, but boys and girls, there's plenty of it available. Plenty of it available. You wait until it's $3 or $4 or $5 a gallon and you can only get 5 gallons a week, then put that in your pipe and smoke it and see how that's going to come down. And you're going to be paying those same $800 a month payments on that SUV, and you're limited to 5 gallons a week. And the price of that stuff may be $5 or $10 a gallon. And you may have the money to buy it, but without the ration card, you're not going to have the gasoline anyway. So if you're living in the city and you're commuting to work, and you're burning up 30, 40 gallons of gas a week, you know, you might want to rethink your lifestyle and your living style, the place that you're living, and you might want to make some radical changes. I know that, for instance, during World War II, we couldn't get sugar, so I think we were allowed a pound of sugar a month or a pound of sugar a week. I don't remember exactly, but it wasn't very much. I got 1 teaspoon on my cereal in the morning. You know, when we were eating cereal, 1 teaspoon of sugar. That's it. That's your ration. Well, you know, what if I wanted 2, 5, or 10, you know, scoops of sugar on my cereal? You know, today there's plenty of sugar available. Now, in 1939, 40, and 41, my grandmother could have, had she known that there was a war coming. Had she known that rationing was coming, she could have stockpiled 100, 200, 500, 1,000 pounds of sugar. There was no shortage of it, not in 39, 40, and 41. It was probably a nickel a pound. I mean, today it's only 4 bits a pound, isn't it, or 60 or 70 cents. I mean, it's not very expensive. Sugar's pretty cheap. Now, had she stockpiled that sugar, then we would have had plenty of sugar for World War II. Other people would have been standing in line, but our standard of living would have been a lot higher, a lot better, had instead of we been sharing one teaspoon of sugar. Coffee was another thing. People were making coffee, and then they'd take the grounds, and then they would make coffee out of those grounds a second, third, and fourth time. Did you know that? In France, the used coffee grounds sold for $5 a pound. Used coffee grounds, $5 a pound. And that was in 1943, 44, 45. That was in France during the war, 44 and 45. Think of that. $5 a pound for used coffee grounds. That's because it was in such short supply and rationed. Now, it's coming again. Now, the reason that the conservative newsletter writers are telling you to buy gold and silver and get out of debt is good advice, but the presumption that all of these people have is that when this economic collapse occurs, depression envelops us, hyperinflation takes over, stagflation is rampant, that Walmart will be full of food, clothing, and shelter. And that all you'll do is change your gold into commercial paper and then take the paper down to Walmart and trade it in. But I want to tell you, boys and girls, that that's not the scenario that I see. That's not the scenario that I lived through in World War II and the Korean War. As a paper boy in 1950, during the Korean War, rubber bands were rationed. We couldn't get rubber bands, and we had to fold our papers or deliver them flat. Now, let me tell you, a pound of rubber bands at that time was selling for $1.50 a pound. And I had my customers save the rubber bands and give them back to me when I collected on my paper route so that I would have rubber bands to wrap their papers in. So living without is possible. Might even be good for you, but it impacts upon your standard of living. For instance, let's take water. When this farm that I'm living on right now was established by old man Hale in 1914, he carried water from the spring up to the house that he built, which is about 400 feet, a little more than a football field long, in 2 5-gallon buckets. I can assure you that he wasn't flushing the toilet every time that he went and urinated a cup of urine into the toilet bowl. He wasn't flushing that down with 5 gallons of water that he had to carry 400 feet. So people used a lot less water. That's the point. So you can get by on a whole lot less, but your standard of living is a lot better when you have running water that comes in from a pressurized tank out of a well that has an endless supply, so that when you go potty, you can flush the toilet 10 times a day. It isn't anything for 50 gallons of water to go down the toilet. We don't care about how much water we use in our dishwasher, but I'll assure you that if I had to carry all that water up from the spring by hand, we would use a whole lot less of it. Now, that's the moral to the story. The concept that because you've got all this gold and silver that you're going to have all of these goods and services available to you, I think, is a fiction. So, some of us, and this is spearheaded, I think, mainly by the Mormons. I don't know quite where they got their idea, but starting back in the 1870s, you know, this guy, Brigham Young, he said that all Mormons needed a 7-year supply of food on hand all the time. It's kind of a theological doctrine. Well, 7 years of food comes out of the Bible, and there was a fellow back in Genesis chapter 47 named Joseph. You can read the Joseph story. He starts off about Genesis chapter 42, 3, 4, 5, and he goes out and he has this dream, it was actually the Pharaoh had this dream, and Joseph came over and interpreted the dream for him. It was a message from God. Store up for 7 years, and then they had a 7-year famine. And so the concept that you see in the New Testament is that we learn from all of these examples that come from the Scripture. You know, Jesus said, man doesn't live by bread alone, but by every word that proceeds out of the mouth of God. Genesis 47 is one of those words that proceeded out of the mouth of God in a 7-year supply. Is pretty much the standard. And so Brigham Young, he came up with the conclusion. He said, well, it would be a good idea. Well, let's ask this question. Let's suppose that every Mormon family in the world today had a 7-year supply of food on hand. They got a 7-year supply of coffee, a 7-year supply of sugar, a 7-year supply of meat, a 7-year supply of spaghetti. You know, everything that they're going to use. What would be wrong with that? What would be so bad about that? Let's extrapolate that out a day further. Let's suppose that everybody in the United States of America had a 7-year supply of food on hand. Because when I was a kid in 1940, during World War II, every family had a storeroom. It was called a pantry. That pantry had a 1-year supply of food. 1 year. Not seven. Just one. And that's because families live from harvest to harvest. You see, you plant your corn in April. You harvest your corn in September. You plant your corn again next April. So from September until next April, excuse me, there's no corn in April, May, June, and July. So, you know, while this corn is growing, you don't have any corn. And you only harvest your corn. You only harvest your crop once a year. You only get apples once a year. So the apples that you're getting in October have to last you until the end of next September. So we used to store apples. We used to dry food. We used to can food so that we had a 1-year supply. Now, after World War II, we got away from that because we have these supermarkets. And today, we believe in our just-in-time delivery. We Americans have a 3-day supply of food. Just check your own house. How much do you have? About a 3-day supply. Maybe you got a week. Okay, maybe you're a real nut and you got a month's supply of food. You could live a whole month, 30 days, with no food. Can't you just look back at the Bosnia War in the 1990s? Rwanda? Can you see the shortages that developed in those countries during periods of war? Now, it doesn't make any difference how much money you've got. I mean, if you've got enough money, there will be a black market out there. And if you've got the money, in Bosnia, gasoline was selling for $20 a gallon in 1992. Two or three or four when that war was going on. And coffee was $4 a cup. $4 for a cup of coffee. And it was available on the black market. But you know, most people don't have that kind of money. And furthermore, if the government catches you violating the rationing program that they set up, then they want to put you in jail or they want to penalize you. So number one, your gold and silver may be thrown to the bats and moles because you may not have the availability of the products. And number two, you may have a rationing system over there that's going to put you in jail. Wouldn't you be better off if you had your own supplies up front and ahead of time? And that's where old Brigham Young came in. Well, the Mormons, you know, being just natural, normal people like all the rest of us, are just about as lazy as anybody you can point your finger at. So they began to water that down, and they said, well, 7 years is too much, 4 ought to be plenty. And so they, over the years, they lowered that to 4. And then they lowered that again to 2, and then they lowered it to 1. And then the last time I heard, they got a 3-day supply, and they're waiting for FEMA to feed them. 3-day supply like all the rest of us. So the Mormons have kind of gotten off of this, but before they got off of the food storage and the preparedness program, which I kind of suspect that the average rank and file Mormon is still stocking up a 1 or 2 year supply. They're just not advertising it because I think they're more concerned about you Catholics, Protestants, and Jews coming over and shooting them and then stealing their food. But, you know, that's really not a very viable solution, and I want to tell you why. Because I had a guy here one time, and he said, well, I know where to go when the end comes. I'll just come over and steal it from you, Gordon. And I thought, you know, this poor fool doesn't understand the logistics of the problem. So let me explain the logistics. Whether you think you should have a 1-year supply of food, a 2-year, 4-year, 7-year, I don't care what the numbers are, but let me tell you how much food that it takes to feed one person for one day. It's 1 pound dry or 3 pounds wet. So if you're going to open a can, it's 3 pounds of food a day. All right, so let's put in a stock of canned food. And, you know, you're going to have things, you know, like peas and beans and maybe some Spam and chip beef and you know, whatever the cans, whatever you think you want to eat. Let's take 3 pounds a day because that's what you're going to eat. So we'll take 3 times 365, and that's 1,095 pounds. That's 1,100 pounds of food. That's a half a ton. Half a ton. 1,100 pounds for one person for 1 year. What are you going to do? Come over here and shoot me and then load this half a ton up in your knapsack and carry it out of here? Have we taken leave of our senses? You're going to go over to the local Mormon and shoot this guy and you're going to feed off of his pantry? Pray tell. Pray tell. Assuming that this Mormon's going to let you do that and that he's not going to shoot you in response to you trying to shoot him, have you thought this through? I mean, we're talking about quite a bit of weight here, 1,000 pounds, and that's for 1 year. Now, I think that you need a minimum of 4 years. So let's take that times four is 4,380. Now, that's 2 tons. 2 tons for a 4-year supply. That's one person. One person. 4 years. Wet food, canned. We're talking about 4,380 pounds. Now, let's take a family of four. Let's just go times four. That's 17,520 pounds. I mean, we're talking about nearly 10 tons here. You're just going to come over and rip off your local Mormon neighbor and just take his 10 tons of food and just move it over to your house. Is that what you got in mind? Now, I don't think that that's very logical, and I don't think that that's going to happen. You're gonna load this on a semi-truck, are you? And you're going to get through the roadblocks and through the checkpoints and move this food around after you've just killed this guy? Now, I think that when you have martial law, when you have checkpoints, when you have wartime emergency measures, martial law, I don't think that this kind of a program is going to work very well for you at all. Now, the program that did work was the program that we had during World War II. It was a rationing system. And people had victory gardens. And my grandmother used to buy 100 baby chicks at a time, and then she would raise those baby chicks up. Other people had rabbits, and other people, you know, had other little small animals, you know, that they would raise. Mainly it was rabbits and chickens, but some people had sheep and goats, depending on, you know, the more ground you got, the bigger the animal you can keep. If you got 3 or 4 acres, you could keep a milk cow. But most people just had a lot. Now, we had a lot and a house on it, and we had a big garden. And we could feed our entire family. My grandmother used to go over to Mrs. Johnson, Mrs. Birchfield, and Mrs. Swain, and those four ladies would work together canning. And some of them had apricot trees and peach trees and apple trees and cherry trees, and they would barter back and forth among each other, you know, and they'd go over to each other's house and help them can to fill up that pantry. They needed to make 1,000 pounds of canned food per person per year. Can you believe that? And yeah, you can produce that much produce off of 50 by 100 square feet. Actually, there's 2,400 square feet. With French intensive culture, you can actually produce that. I mentioned that in my opening ad. I said, hell, you can do that in downtown Cleveland if you knew how. And that's what subsistence and survival is all about. Americans have lost sight, have forgotten how to live, how to subsist and survive. We depend upon Mexicans to come up here and raise our food for us. You know, there was a time when we white Anglo-Saxons actually worked. I mean, there was a time when the white man actually went out and sweat. I mean, we didn't spend all of our time in the air-conditioned malls and in the video game arcades. We actually bucked bales, tramped silage, milked cows, and weeded and hoed out in the fields. Americans, white people, actually did that in this country, in my lifetime. Now, of course, that's long since past. I don't think you could find a white boy in this country that could raise enough food to keep himself alive for a week or 10 days. But I would submit to you, boys and girls, that it may be time for us to get off our dead ass and go to work. Because I'm not sure that all these blacks, Hispanics, and all these Chinese and Japanese and South Koreans are going to continue to support us in a lifestyle that we have become accustomed to forever without getting paid. And I think that's what our problem is. These people aren't getting paid. Now, if we had the money to hire it and to get it done, well, okay. But you see, we don't have that money, and that's the report that I gave you for the last 3 days, three nights. I told you, you've got a $600 billion balance of payments deficit, and your federal budget's out of balance by $500 billion, it's being funded by a $2 billion a day loan. Every day, the United States of America has to borrow $2 billion from these other countries around the world to keep us going. I'm not sure they're going to continue doing that. God bless them. I hope all you Chinese and all you South Koreans and Japanese continue to support us without getting paid in the lifestyle that we have become accustomed to, and I hope that you continue to work for us and slave for us forever. I'm just afraid that you're going to wake up one of these days and get tired of doing that. So let's take a break right here, and we'll come back and we'll talk about why should we store and what should we store anyway when we come back. Now, you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, and we're heard 7 days a week around the world over the Internet. For more information about the Law School and Law Hour, please go to our website. It's georgegordon.org. Now, The Law School is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school that's open to individuals by prearrangement. The Law School conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc, and the Law Hour website is updated weekly. It has our radio log, schedule, and archive. It can be accessed through the website at georgegordon.org. Remember, the law school offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. To order yours, please call the law school direct at 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. The Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date. The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Should remind you also that the opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine and mine alone. They do not necessarily represent the beliefs and opinions of the advertiser, sponsors, management, or staff of the network or of this local radio station. Now, for more information about the Law Hour and editorial review, remember that's georgegordon.org or call the Law School Direct 417-273-4967. Well, I brought three books into the studio, so let's take a look at book number one. Now, this is a Mormon book. In fact, probably all three of these are Mormon books. Not because the Mormons are the first and last word, and that's not because I'm a Mormon, because I'm not, but it's because the Mormons are the one group of people, kind of like the Amish, you know. The Amish are one group of people over here, or the Jews, you know, they're one group of people over here. Well, these Mormons are a group of people, and they had one thing going for them that nobody else had, and that is preparedness. Preparing for the Great Tribulation. That one end time event in the history of the world that Jesus said would be greater than, worse than Noah's flood. He said that in Matthew chapter 24. He said there's never been a time like it. And so old Brigham Young and the Mormons sat down, they looked that over, and they said, my God, we better be prepared for this thing called the Great Tribulation. And so they did. You know, for 100 years, those Mormons were ready for it. And so the number one group to go to, if you want to find out about preparedness, in my view, would be the Mormons. Now, here's a book written. It's called Beginner's Guide to Family Preparedness. Now, remember that the Mormons number about 13 million people around the world. And this is the Beginner's Guide to Family Preparedness, Food Storage, Back to Basics, and Survival Facts by Rosalie Mason. Wrote this book, she did, back in 1977. It's been published 4 times, and the last copyright date on here is 1993, so it's 12 years old. So it's not, you know, so far out of date that it's gone back to the Middle Ages. This is just, you know, a few years back. And in Chapter 1, they start off by asking the question, why should we store? What would be the purpose for you putting in a 1-year, 2-year, 4-year supply? Now, I want to suggest to you that you store a 4-year supply and have a garden or a garden area where you can produce 100% of everything that you consume in addition to a 4-year supply. Now, that's my suggestion. That's my take on Deuteronomy 28 and Leviticus 26. That's my take on those 30 prophecies in the Scripture that deal with this great tribulation. I think the Mormons had it right years ago when they said, you know, we better have some food stockpiled. Now, a guy said to me, he said, well, you're not showing faith in God. And I thought about that for a minute, and I said, what do you mean by that? And he said, you know, if you had faith in God, you know that God clothes the lilies of the field, and that he numbers the hairs on your head and knows when every bird falls. God will provide for you. And I said, you know, that's a good point. That's a good point. Now, are there any exceptions to that rule? Are there any people out there where God might not provide for them? And he said, yeah, people that are lacking in faith. And I said, well, that's me. That's me. I raised my hand and said, I'm number one. I'm the faithless one. So it would look like to me that for all of us faithless ones out here, maybe we ought to have a few extra pounds of food or a couple of extra buckets of wheat stacked over in the basement, over in the corner someplace, maybe to tide us over for a week or 10 days. Now, I'm not opposed to all you religious people that have all this faith out here and you think that God is going to protect you. And hell, he may do that. I'm not saying that he won't. But what's a worst case scenario? Let's suppose that old George over here stockpiles, you know, 2 tons of food, and I'm sitting over here waiting for the great tribulation to come. And God comes along and says, well, George, because of your great faith and because I love you, I'm going to rapture you off to heaven and I'm going to take you out of this great tribulation. You don't need to worry about it. What am I going to do? Say, damn, I don't get to eat all of my 2 tons of food. I don't get to stay here and enjoy the great tribulation with millions of other people who are about to be murdered and killed and raped, robbed, and pillaged. I mean, come on, guys. That's like buying a life insurance policy. And 20 years later, you sit there and you curse God because you didn't die. No, you buy a life insurance policy and you hope that you don't die. Same thing with stockpiling food. You know, I might have a stock of food, and greatest thing that could ever happen to me is that I die of old age and I get buried and I don't ever have to use it. You know, you prepare for war, but you hope that it doesn't come. You know, we weren't looking forward to World War II, but when it came upon us, you know, well, here it is. And now we got to live with it. I don't know of anybody that's running around out here saying, boy, I can't wait until we get involved with the next war with Iran. I'm afraid that's what the current administration has up their sleeve. I'm afraid that that's the next target. It's going to be Iran. I mean, after all, they got 120 billion barrels of oil. I don't think we're going to attack North Korea. They don't have any oil. They got 4 million starving people. I don't think we need that. We need the oil. We don't need more starving mouths to feed. So they start out in chapter 1, and we ask the question, why should we store? Well, in recent years, we've heard much about from civil authorities concerning the storage of food in case of an emergency. Well, their thinking being influenced primarily by premonitions of famine, warfare, or civil strife, we're concerned about the welfare of our people in times of sickness, accident, unemployment, or other incidents or accidents that might suspend income or availability of supplies. So before our national economy made it convenient for all of us to get what we wanted by merely having the purchase price, man was in the habit of providing enough of the necessities of life for himself and his family to last from one harvest to the next. People in those days were careful to plan ahead for future needs. We believe that our custom of being prepared was a wise one, and people would do well to continue the preparedness practice today. Well, I just mentioned that to you. I mean, there was a time when all of us white boys over here used to prepare from year to year. Now, what happens if you have a bum harvest the following year? Does it make sense that if you're the kind of person that prepares from year to year, that maybe it would be good to have a 2-year supply on hand? I know, it's a wild new concept for most of you, but just think about it. If we're going to live from harvest to harvest, what if we were living from this harvest to the next harvest, and then we plant, but we have a drought, and we have a flood, and we get wiped out? Then we're going to die. So having a 2-year supply would be kind of prudent, wouldn't it? 2-year supply. What would be wrong with having a 3-year supply in case you had two bad harvests back to back? I told you about old Frank Roach. Remember one time he had 650 tons of hay sitting in the barn. The neighbor came over after a flood and said, "Sell me some hay." Frank said, "No, I've only got enough for myself." The guy said, "My God, man, you got a 3-year supply there." And he said, "Yeah, and if we have a flood next year, I'll need every bale, won't I?" This was the neighbor, a grade A dairyman, bought all of his hay week to week, lived out of the refrigerator. And then when the flood came and washed out the bridges and he couldn't get hay, he had to sell his cows. And guess who was at the sale buying his cows at distressed prices? Old Frank, the only guy that's got any hay. Boy, that's not the way to win friends and influence people, but it's the way to make money. It's the way to prosper. It's the way of being prepared. Now, notice that the Mormons are sitting here saying, you know, there was a time when we lived from year to year. That's before the supermarkets and Walmart. And people that lived from year to year had a 2-year or a 3-year supply in case they had a drought, a flood, or a bad harvest. Now, people live from harvest to harvest. And many years ago, our grandfathers used to fill their pantries from harvest to harvest, going into town to purchase needed supplies only 3 or 4 times a year. I got a neighbor over here. In fact, he's a student, comes in. He goes to Mountain Home nearly every day. It's 40 miles. Let me run this by you. In our society today, in our highly mobile society with all of this cheap oil and all of these automobiles, here's a guy that's got a car. And it's not just an ordinary car, it's a $40,000 car with $800 a month payments. And it's got fancy wheels, and I don't know what the gas mileage is, but I got a machine out here, and my machine gets about 15 miles to the gallon. Now, it's 40 miles down to Mountain Home, so you go, you know, 15, 30, 45, takes 3 gallons down and 3 gallons back. That's 6 gallons at $2 a gallon. That's $12 just to buy the gasoline to go to Mountain Home to go shopping. The closest Walmart to me is in Mountain Home, and it's $12 away at $2 a gallon. But listen, the gasoline is dirt cheap. It's the $5,000 machine. You know, I had to pay $5,000 for this machine I drive. And then it breaks, and when it breaks, I got to take it over to Boyd over at the DX station. He charges $25 an hour to fix it. Now, you start adding up these costs. You know, let's just try this out. Let's take $12. Showing $12, and let's just divide that by 40 miles. That's 30 cents a mile to buy gasoline. 30 cents a mile to buy gasoline. Now, they tell me that the gasoline is one half of the cost of owning an automobile. So let's multiply that to 30 cents and then go 40 miles. So if it costs 30 for gas, 30 for repairs and maintenance and purchase price and et cetera, that's 60 cents a mile. Now, let's take 40 times 0.60 and we get $24. It costs $24 every time you go to the store in Mountain Home. Do you people add those costs onto your food bill every time you drive to the store? Have you thought about that? I mean, you got degrees after your name, you got letters after your name, you've been to college, but can you do the arithmetic? All right, now in the fall, cattle, hogs, and sheep were butchered, brine cured and set aside in the cellar for winter food, garden vegetables were canned, root vegetables were buried in the root cellar, leek, onions, and garlic were hung on strong twine from the ceiling in the cellar to dry, berries were gathered with other fruit, and jams and jellies were made and stored in the cellar, and the other winter food, corn was gathered, shucked, dried, and taken to the neighbor's grist mill to be ground into winter supply of cornmeal. The meal was poured into barrels, and it too was stored in the cellar. Sugar cane was cut, the juice extracted, and grandfather would fire up the syrup cooker, where the juice would be painstakingly cooked until syrup was made. The pure ribbon cane syrup was poured into gallon buckets, labeled and stored away with the rest of the year's harvest. Neighbors from near and far would bring their cane to grandfather to be made into syrup. After all the vegetables were harvested, syrup made, and the meat was in the brine, a list of staples would be compiled to round out the winter food needs. And since the family traveled by wagon and it was the only way of transporting supplies, trips into town were made only 3 or 4 times a year. Got that? 3 or 4 times a year. Yet our grandfathers were prepared for any eventuality. Now let's start thinking about going to town three or four times a year instead of three or four times a week. I mean, it costs $24 every time that we go down to Mountain Home. Now, it's not that I don't have the $24, but, you know, 24 times 10 is $240. It all gets added on to the cost of the goods that we're buying from Walmart. Walmart may have cheap goods, but going back and forth to get them may add to the price of the goods, and it makes a little difference in the amount that you're actually paying. Now, in our travels, we have come into contact with people who live from paycheck to paycheck and have no food reserves. And these same people have had a variety of incidents suspend their income for prolonged periods of time. Now, a few years ago, a family was called to our attention by a mutual friend. The father was involved in an industrial accident in which both of his feet were broken. He was kept in the hospital overnight and then returned home to face the dilemma of being confined to a wheelchair for 9 months with no income other than a small state compensation insurance check. Now, if he and his wife had counseled together with foresight and systematically accumulated a year's food reserves, how much easier this tragedy could have been. And while we enjoy the convenience of the corner grocery store, we should not lose sight of the ever-present possibility that a time may come when our income stops and we will not be able to purchase the goods that we need. Or worse still, that though we may have the purchasing power, we might not have food or commodities available to buy. Let me give you a quick illustration here. It costs $16 a pound to produce garlic and sell it at retail in the United States. Gilmore, California is the garlic capital of America. The Chinese got into the garlic business, and they're producing and selling garlic in the United States at retail for $3.65 a pound. Now, how long do you think that the American domestic garlic industry is going to survive? It's gone. Dead on arrival. Now that we're getting this cheap garlic from China, which everybody wants, $4 a pound garlic, it's a fourth of what we used to pay. But now we have no domestic garlic industry. Now let's suppose that the Chinese get tired of supplying our garlic for worthless treasury bills and commercial paper that's virtually irredeemable to them. Especially if they want to buy Union Oil Company, and Congress says, no, we're not going to let you. We're going to let you sell to us, and we're going to pay you with worthless dollars that you can't spend back here in the United States because we're not going to let you buy what you want. Huh? Did you get that? You know, you may, boys and girls, be doing without garlic because there isn't going to be any domestic garlic producers. Have you thought about that? Now, how much more prudent would it be if you had a 5-year supply of garlic, whatever amount of garlic? No, garlic isn't something that you use a whole lot of. But I've got a raised bed down here, and about once every 5 years, I plant one of those raised beds just of garlic, 60 feet long, 6.5 feet wide, on 3-inch centers. And it produces enough garlic for our family for about 5 years. And I harvest the garlic, and then I peel it, and I put it in jars, and I put it in the freezer and freeze it. And I have a 5-year supply of garlic. And you're going to come here and steal my garlic from me, are you? A 5-year supply? What are you going to do with it? Do you get a freezer to put it in? How are you going to move 100 jars of garlic in your knapsack? But can you see how much more logical it would be for you to have a raised bed, 6.5 feet by 60 feet long, planted in garlic, and you harvest that garlic and put it in your own freezer? What about all 52 of you families doing that? Now, how many of these food products are there? Well, in our home here, I have an inventory book, and we have 127 things that we use in our family. And we don't use any hominy, and we don't use any Brussels sprouts. You know, there's some things that we like and some things that we don't. So I plant those things that I like, and the things that I don't like, I don't. But there's 127 things I have to have. Garlic's one of those things I have to have, but I only have to plant it once every 5 years. And I got a 5-year supply. So if you have a 4 or 5-year supply of something on hand, it's kind of handy. Then if I break both of my feet and I can't work for a whole year, so what? I've got another 4-year supply of food. If my house is bought and paid for and I'm not making any payments, all I got to worry about is the taxes. Okay, so if I got a 5-year stash of the taxes that's set aside, then I can pay the taxes for the next 5 years, can't I? And you know, every one of you 52 families out there can do the same thing. There was a time in America when even us white boys could support ourselves all by ourselves. Now, it's not that way today in 2005. But now for some of you people out there, if you'd like to learn how to do that, we teach a class here on subsistence and survival. And let me just tell you that there's a few things you need to know. Things like simple home food storage and survival gardening cookbook and making the best of basics and nuclear war survival skills. And first aid, 70 benefits of the covenant. What do you get out of the old covenant anyway? Did you know that there's 70 benefits that come from that old covenant? Are you cashing in on those? Did you get your share? How about first aid? How about a 55-gallon barrel inventory or a survival farm? Do you know what the 64 life-threatening problems are? Can you solve all of those 64 life-threatening problems? Let me tell you what one of them is. AIDS is one of them. You go to the hospital because you were in an auto accident and they give you a transfusion with AIDS-tainted blood and gives you AIDS. Now, what do you need a 5-year supply of food for if you're going to die from AIDS? I mean, that's just one problem out of many that you have to solve. You know, you don't need a food storage program if you're going to die by getting run over by a Mack truck. If you can't learn to cross the street when the light's green, well, what do you need a food storage program for? And food's only one part of the program. You know, you got to have food, clothing, and shelter. You got to have clothes on top of it. Of what good is the food if you're gonna freeze to death? If you don't have a house to store the food and the clothes in, what value is the food and clothes? I mean, you got to have all three, or you don't need any of the above. You've got to solve all 64 of these life-threatening problems. Did you know all 64 of them are laid out for you in Deuteronomy 28 and Leviticus 26? So God's telling you, he says, okay, boys and girls, here's what I'm going to do to you. When you give me the finger and tell me to stick it where there's no daylight, here's what I'm going to do to you. And that's what this preparation is all about. You got to be able to survive what God is going to throw at you. Now, of course, you people with all this faith out there, you don't need to do this because you people are going to get raptured off. But for George Gordon, who's not going to get raptured off, and a few others of you out there that might not get raptured off, maybe a couple extra cans of pork and beans wouldn't be a bad idea. Now, here's a family of five, lives nearly 2 years on food reserves. There's another family we'd like to mention, like this first family I told you about. The father was in an industrial accident. His leg was severely broken in four places, between the knee and the ankle. Father Smith, like Father Brown, received state compensation insurance. He also had to face the realization that he would be unable to work for at least a year and a half. It has been nearly 2 years since the accident. Yet Father Smith is so prepared with the year's food reserves and other necessities, he has not shifted from himself the responsibility of taking care of his own family. We've observed that most people never consider that they might find themselves in a disaster situation. They somehow think it always happens to the other guy. And most people today say, well, we'll rely on FEMA. We'll just rely on all the rest of the taxpayers. Hold it, boys and girls. What happens when all of us are in the same boat and the Chinese are trying to sink it? You know, there's not going to be enough out there for FEMA or your government to give everybody. Now, when a hurricane goes through Florida, you know, we can take care of a few thousand people. But when you got millions like you had during the Great Depression, it's going to be another story. Then there's the big drought of 1975. In 1954, the late I.R. Tannehill, who was then chief of the U.S. Weather Bureau, now the Weather Service, warned in the middle of the previous U.S. drought cycle, what will we do when the great drought of 1975 settles down upon us? Tannehill, at that time, accurately foretold the good news that we have since experienced, as well as pinpointing the floods which ravaged widespread parts of America in the 1970s. Tannehill's forecasts were made in the September 1954 issue of Country Gentleman magazine. Now, in Matthew 24, verse 7, there's a prophetic warning. It said, one of the most emphatic prophetic warnings foreshadowing the end of this age of man and the establishment of the long-overlooked world-ruling kingdom of God was that there would be famines and pestilences and earthquakes in diverse places. Now, who knows how long it will be till these events influence us on a personal basis. Now, the United States is the land of milk and honey, and with this prediction in mind, let us explore then the possibility of a famine. The United States has always been referred to as the land of milk and honey, or the land of plenty. We have experienced many years of good, abundant crops with food everywhere. Many of us have never felt the gnawing pangs of hunger. The drought of 75 is behind us. So is the critical winter of 76. With less snowpack and rain in the west than ever before, the winter wheat crop had to be plowed under and replanted. The severe cold in Florida ruined the 1977 summer citrus fruit crop and the tomato crop. Therefore, it would seem the predictions found in Matthew and reiterated by the late Mr. Tannehill by scientific means seems to be occurring. Only they're getting worse. By the way, I don't know if you're aware of this, but earthquakes are becoming more frequent and more devastating. These prophecies of Matthew 24, Mark 13, Luke 21, which are derived from Moses, Deuteronomy 28, and Leviticus 26, are happening to us today. 2005. Now, the cities involved in the flood caused the Teton Dam disaster. That's why food reserves are more essential than money reserves. You know, we urge you to reason and reassess your position concerning a practical storage program for your particular family. We believe that food reserves are more essential than money reserves, and there may be a time when you have suitcases filled with money and don't have enough to buy a loaf of bread or a quart of milk. This is what happened in Germany in 1915 and 1924. A customer came into my store in California requesting information on food storage. After chatting a few minutes, she informed me that she was, in fact, in Germany during this period of time. This sweet old lady, with tears in her eyes, stated that her grandchildren were going to have the food that she could not purchase for her own children. The lady worked as an accountant in Germany, and her last paycheck was 6 billion marks. She actually carried the money in 2 suitcases and could not purchase the needed food for her daughter. Finally, relatives who were living here in the United States sent steamship tickets for her family to move to New York. Tuck that one away in your heart. And that's what we're talking about here, boys and girls. And this is why. Food is probably more valuable than gold. Or will be at some point in the future. Now, of course, as long as Walmart is well-stocked and you've got plenty of money, there's no problem. No problem. Next time, we'll take a look at the famine and survival in America, looking back at Howard J. Ruff, 1973. Remember Ruff Times and old Howard Ruff? Well, we'll talk a little about that. And then we'll take a look at Don't Get Caught With Your Pantry Down, and we'll take a look at some of these concepts that people have about being prepared. Most people in America laugh, ridicule, and make fun of you when you talk about being prepared for war, famine, disease. Nobody that's ever lived through it laughed about it. All right, you've been listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Remember that The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States and worldwide over the Internet. Now, for more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, just go to our website. It's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Remember, the Law School teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. The Law School offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. To order yours, just call the Law School direct, 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. All right, we're out of time. We'll see you back here tomorrow night, same time, same station, talking about the economic bubble. Thanks for listening, and until then, good night, friends.